Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and fall is definitely here. There's still some work to be done in the garden, and it's time to start planning for next year. We will take your calls this hour with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me today, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Ajay.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here. Aaron Stile is also here, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
And I know a lot of people heard us send Richard Giron off last week as he retired. Again, I want to assure people that Horticulture Day will continue into the future. And Aaron, you and Cindy Haynes are going to be taking turns, at least for the time being, being on every show. And then we'll continue to bring in the various guests from the Hort Department and surrounding fields throughout the year as well.
Yeah, both Cindy and I are happy and excited to talk to everybody each week.
Well, we're very grateful for you. And one of the saddest things about Richard's retirement is that the Hort line, which Richard took care of for many, many years, will not be continuing due to budget constraints. Mm-hmm. That position can't be filled right now, but Hort Day will continue. And let's talk about some garden chores. Of course, a lot of places had some frost last night, Ajay. There's a possibility of frost in the forecast yet. So that really changes things in the garden. Is it time to go out and take a look at your tomato plants?
That's a good point, Charity. The temperatures are definitely sliding down. Although, you know, we just heard from our state climatologist, Justin Glisson, that maybe after this week, the temperatures might go up again and be the regular normal temperature for the month of October. So it's not completely yet set to put our, you know, rakes and everything down or drop our guards. But it's a good time to start planning and also taking stock of how this particular season went and how things performed. So definitely it's time to start gathering data from what has happened this year and planning for the coming season.
Now, there are some crops that stay in the garden. It's even planting time for garlic, for example. So what are the crops that will continue growing?
So there are many cool season vegetables that are still in the ground. Listeners and homeowners, they would have planted, for example, broccoli, beginning of August or end of July. Broccoli still growing there. Beets are in the ground. Cabbage and cauliflower. So those crops, those cool crops, are still in the ground, and we are looking somewhere around end of October, beginning of November for their harvest. So they are still growing. Garlic is a very exciting and rewarding crop because this fall is the time when we plant it, and it does exceptionally well in our conditions, provided we plant the appropriate cultivars and the types of garlic. So listeners should get ready and have their garlic cloves ready to be planted. Not immediately. There are some caveats of when you should plant. But yes, garlic, we are all looking forward to garlic planting.
And how do you plant garlic, Ajay?
So there are a couple of things one needs to take into account while planting garlic. I think one of the biggest mistakes which one could do is plant garlic too early. For example, now. So I would not plant my garlic right now. Rather wait till end of October. For some folks, it might seem too late, but no. We don't want the garlic to start growing after we plant. Typically, when we plant garlic in the soil, they start producing the roots, and that's what we want. We want them to establish, but we don't want to have them start producing their shoots and put the stalk up. So wait, don't plant garlic now, maybe end of October, from end of October until maybe Thanksgiving. That's a good time to plant garlic. The way we plant garlic, that's also very critical. We want to ensure that we place these individual cloves, number one, the pointed side up, because sometime while in the hurry of planting, we might not think of, you know, putting it in the right way. So having the pointed side up and placing the clove at least 3 to 4 inches below the soil, below the ground. It should not be above that, because in the winter with the frost and the thaw and heave, these cloves might come up and get exposed to these fluctuating temperatures. So we need to absolutely make sure that we place the garlic clove at least 3 to 4 inches in the soil, cover it, and then cover it with mulch, about 3 to 4 inches of mulch as well. So that would be the, you know, ideal way of planting garlic.
So let's talk about some of the kind of cleanup that we might need to do. Now, if you look in the forecast and you see a frost, does that mean you need to go out and pick any green tomatoes that might be still on your plants?
Yes, I would definitely do that. Tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, you know, these are solanaceous crops, summer-loving crops, so they won't fare that well with the frost coming. So it's a good time to go out and pick the tomatoes. With, you know, if it's below 32, absolutely pick. But if it's at, let's say, 36, 37, then you can wait, because looking into the forecast, the coming few weeks are going to be okay. They're not going to be that cold. One important thing I would do is, and you can do it even now, is take a stock of what is out there and maybe make a sketch of your garden. And when I mean sketch, it's like just a piece of paper and on it write or draw of where you planted which vegetable. Because come spring, it will be very difficult to rely on our memory to decide, oh, where was my tomato last year? Because one of the things we don't want to do is plant tomatoes or plants from that same family in the same spot. Because we have to rotate our crops. That's the crop rotation practice, because that helps to reduce the amount of diseases in our vegetable crops. So absolutely go out there, take a stock, make a picture, make a sketch of where you planted what, so that you'll be better prepared for next season.
All right. And of course, we know that, for example, we need to plant the tomatoes somewhere else next season. That's why that map is so important. But do we also need to do some cleanup to make sure we're not leaving anything behind that might cause problems next year?
Absolutely. We need to definitely clean up our plots where we planted this year. I would say remove all the dead or specifically more the infected stems, leaves, flowers, because those will carry on or have the inoculum of fungi, for example, Septoria blight in tomato or early blight in tomato. Those are caused by pathogens, and they might linger in these dead infected materials. So absolutely remove them. That will help to reduce the diseases next year. And remaining portion or remaining plants, or if you have a patch where there was no disease, the plants were healthy, in that case, what I would do is just pull those plants out, maybe run a lawnmower on top of it just to break them into small pieces, and then add it back to the soil, because that will be a valuable addition of organic matter. So the non-infected plants can be broken down into small pieces and put back.
All right. And Aaron, we're going to spend some time in the coming weeks talking about what to do with our lawns. Now that it's fall, we're going to have our turf grass specialist on the show. But are there some basic things that we should be thinking about with the yard and garden right now?
Yeah, I think the big thing to keep in mind is there are a few things that you don't have to do in the fall. Namely, you don't want to prune. It's really tempting to prune this time of year because you're out there kind of cleaning things up in your vegetable garden and you spot something. And we don't want to remove any of that vegetation because it encourages new growth. And this is not the time of year we want anything kind of sprouting into new growth right before winter. The other thing that you don't have to do this time of year is clear cut your perennial border. So there's been a long kind of held belief that you want to have this like clean slate by the end of fall going into winter when it comes to your perennial garden. And in all reality, your plants and the ecosystem does better when you leave as much material there as possible. Now, just like with the vegetable garden, if you're having disease issues or serious insect problems, removing material related to that is going to be really beneficial. But if you can leave it in place, it looks nicer over the winter. You help over the plants overwinter better because they have kind of like a little blanket, and it supports native pollinators and wildlife like birds.
And it's less work right now. So that's...
And it's less work.
That's all yes. really, really good
I think
good
it's
news.
A lot easier. It's a lot easier to pull that dead hosta foliage off in the spring than it is to go through and cut it all off in the fall.
So, of course, one of the things that we know that comes with winter are hungry bunnies and hungry deer. Is mm-hmm. this a good time of year to think about that and maybe go out and get some work done while it's not really cold and the wires that you might want to bend hurt your fingers?
Yeah, you can start that now. I usually start that work kind of mid-October, even as late as mid-November. But going out and protecting small newly planted things, protecting small trees with wrap or chicken wire fencing is really important for the rabbits. The chicken wire fencing is a great way to keep them out, but it needs to be at least 2 feet, if not 3 feet tall, because remember, you might have snow cover and that raises the height up and they can hop over the fence if there's too much snow cover. So you want to be sure to have high enough protection on your trees and shrubs, especially those that are really favored by bunnies over the winter months, things in the rose family, for example.
All right. Well, it sounds like we have quite a bit of work that we can do. And hopefully, Ajay, you're right about the forecast, and we're going to have some lovely fall weather to do it in. If you have questions about things going on in your yard or garden, you can join the conversation. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or, of course, you can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hort Day continues in just a few minutes. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You're welcome to join with your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Steve is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, what's your question?
Well, we have two peonies that we transplanted 5 years ago when we moved into our current home. One of them is doing well, and the other one isn't. The one that isn't is partially shaded by a tree, but I'm not sure it's at the right depth either. And when would be the best time to transplant a peony?
Aaron?
Yeah, so shade is a big issue for peonies. They don't bloom well when they're in too much shade. And actually, this is the time of year that is best for moving peonies. Typically, we say sometime between mid-September and the early part of October. So if you can get it done in the next week or so, you'll be doing it at the ideal time. Big thing to keep in mind is to make sure that those big fleshy roots that have kind of the little eyes on them or the little buds are only maybe 1 to 2 inches below the soil surface. And that you don't put too much mulch on top to add a significant amount of depth to that. And that will help make sure that you get them at the right depth and hopefully in a sunnier spot so they bloom better for you.
Great. Appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks.
I'll get her done.
Thanks a lot for your call, Steve. 866-780-9100 is the number. We've got another Steve on the line in Mason City. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Looking for comment on experience with a Roma tomato plant that I started from seed in a container indoors in December of 19. Had it outside and was harvesting fruit from it by early May. And then in July, all the leaves turned yellow. And I assumed that it had died and thought, gosh, there's some pretty interesting stem shapes here. I'll just cut off the small branches and use it as a trellis for something. Well, a week later, it was flush with new green leaves, and now I'm harvesting a second crop of tomatoes off this plant. I just wonder whether that's a commonly observed circumstance.
Wow, Ajay, I mean that's pretty unusual.
That's true, but I'm glad that you got the second flush. So tomatoes are a pretty resilient crop. You know, when you cut the stems, the axillary buds or the sometimes the suckers would start growing. So they have many growing points of them. And that's what you're observing here, is that the plant came back and is again producing. To answer your question about the yellowing in the plant, especially in May, June, could have happened because of, you know, several reasons, but it could be if the yellowing was happening from bottom to top, I suspect it's a fungal disease. It could be septoria. It could be early blight. And if that's not the case, if you see a general yellowing all across the plant, it could be nutritional. It could be nitrogen. There was less nitrogen in there. But given the fact that, you know, the plant has come back, there is nitrogen in the soil as well. The nutrients break down, and it's over the period of time available to the plant. So the plant has decided to come back, and I'm glad that you were able to have a second flush, which we typically don't see.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Steve. And Ajay, I mean, it sounds like that could be a little more common than we might think it is, just because most people wouldn't grow a tomato plant in that way. I assume that some people have done some pretty extensive research on that, though.
Oh, that's true. I think maybe since it was planted early, so it had a lot of time in the summer or the spring to grow and kind of went down and then it started coming back up. But typically, tomatoes, especially the determinate types, you know, they stop growing after some time because their apical meristem will become a flower bud. So they stop growing. But some of the indeterminate types, their apical meristem is always vegetative. They just keep growing and they will keep growing until the frost. So that is also, you know, something to take account of.
All right. Let's do a few email questions here. This is from Eldon in Des Moines. We have a 103-year-old white pine tree that was planted in the backyard by the couple who built our house. This pine stands a majestic 120 feet tall. It has shrugged off diseases over the years and even came through the derecho in good shape. It's been in good health until recently. About 12 years ago, this pine survived a lightning strike that blew a strip of the bark straight down the side all the way to the ground. That exposed about 6 inches of wood that eventually grew closed, but not completely. Recently, we noticed sawdust at the base of the remaining gap. Carpenter ants have moved in and made themselves at home. Is there anything we can do at this point to control the ants that would extend the life of the tree, or do we need to brace ourselves? Aaron?
You might have to brace yourself. There's a lot of insect, and in particular insects, that could potentially impact pine. And just a little bit of sawdust on the ground could be from the ants, and they're likely taking advantage of the dead. You know, that lightning strike did kill parts of that tree, and trees don't heal over. They just seal over the damage. So it sounds like this pine did that to a certain extent, but there's always going to be that dead part inside that tree. from that lightning strike. And it kind of sounds like the ants are taking advantage of that space. And there's not a lot you can do about that. It's going to be really hard to control ants inside that tree. I think the best course of action is it's a high-value tree for you, is to get somebody to come out and look at it, a certified arborist, and kind of give their assessment. They can see if there's other insect issues beyond just the opportunistic ants that are in there causing issues, and then kind of help make a plan for what might happen in the future. Certainly 100 years out of any tree is a good run. So not everything lasts forever, but I think it's probably worth it to have somebody come out and look at it in person.
All right. Here's a blueberry question from Jenny in Cedar Rapids. I planted 5 blueberry bushes this spring. Do I need to cover them for the winter or do anything else for them this winter? And she says that she lives in Waterloo and they don't have any protection from northerly winds. The species planted are Rika, Chippewa, and Polaris, and they seem to be well-established and healthy at the moment. I'm not sure who does small fruits these days, Aaron or Ajay. Which one of you wants to tackle that?
With blueberries, the important part is to make sure that the soil pH is optimum. And as we all know, they like acidic pH, anywhere between 4.5 to 5.8. Adding mulch would help. I based on my understanding, it could help to, if it's a sphagnum peat moss-based mulch, it will help to at least keep that pH down. As it disintegrates, it will slowly increase the acidity. Aaron, you want to add anything?
Certainly that's usually the most limiting factor for us in Iowa to grow blueberries. As long as you have good cultivars, most blueberries are relatively hardy, and it's not the cold hardiness that makes it hard for us. It's the soil pH. In northern Iowa, there are some varieties that don't do as well, but if they're healthy and growing, I think your biggest issue over the winter is going to be bunnies more so than the cold.
All right. So a little bit of fencing is a good idea. Here's a question from Deb. Our well-established lilac bush lost all its leaves this summer. They turned brown and fell off. About a month ago, leaves started growing, and now the bush is blooming. Why would it do this, Aaron?
Yeah. So that leaf drop midsummer, either caused by disease or drought or a combination of both, put the plant under a lot of stress. And what happens is occasionally, especially spring blooming plants that are put under a lot of stress, they actually kind of go semi-dormant. And then when they come out of that dormancy, when the new leaves came out, when the temperatures got better, when there was more water available, basically the plant assumed that it had gone through winter and is blooming again. You'll probably have fewer blooms next spring as a result, but it's not a long-term issue for lilac or most shrubs when they do this. So I wouldn't worry too much about the long-term health of this plant. It certainly went through some struggles. Lilac tends to be a pretty hardy shrub. So if it's well-established, it'll probably pull through just fine.
All right. And enjoy lilacs in October. That sounds pretty delightful.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird, but, you might as well just enjoy it while it's there.
Right. All right. This is from Angie in Johnston for you, Ajay. I have carrots and beets in my garden and possibly potatoes, which have been either nibbled on or devoured by mice. For the vegetables with bite marks, are these safe to eat once the bite area of the vegetable is cut off and the vegetable is cooked?
That's always a very contentious question because, food safety people need to weigh in about the safety in terms of consumption. But we see this quite often in the case of sweet potatoes where, they are in the ground for a longer amount of time, a longer period of time. When we harvest, we do see marks and bite marks because of mice. But we do put these sweet potatoes, have them go through a phase where they harden off. And after that, in my experience, if you cut the wound or cut the bite to a certain depth so that bite mark is completely gone and the flesh is clean, I think they are safe because the wound has already healed. They have been outside under the weather element. So, you know, the temperature, the moisture, the microbes out there, they would have kind of, you know, neutralized some of the other harmful pathogens that were there. So it's safe, but make sure you cut the fruit, cut the vegetable or the fruit to a certain depth so that you completely remove that affected portion.
All right, let's go to the phones. John is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, John.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
Yeah, so I recently, after the derecho, had a bunch of canopy that got knocked down, and I have a bunch of sunlight in my backyard now. I was wondering, if I wanted to do dormant seeding, when would be the ideal conditions to drop that seed down in my yard?
All right, so now you can grow grass for the first time. Dormant seeding. Aaron, what do you think?
Well, typically when we want to sow new grass, we're kind of just outside that window. Usually late August and through September is when we can start new turf with a lot of success. Dormant seeding is going to be much later in the season after Thanksgiving. I wouldn't be, especially looking at the forecast coming up, I would consider throwing some seed down now. Grass seed, for the most part, isn't terribly expensive. See if you can't get some to start growing here before. If we're lucky enough to have a nice long fall, it's always better to get the turf established early or in the fall over the spring. And essentially with dormant seeding, you're starting turf in the spring. You're just getting a good jump start on it. When it does come to dormant seeding, though, you want to make sure that it's cold consistently near or below freezing so that you don't get any germination until everything starts warming up again in the spring.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
Thanks for your insight.
Thanks a lot for your call, John, and I hope you grow some nice grass. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's a question from Mike. He says, I'd like to try overwintering some pepper plants, but I don't have a good window for sunshine. Could I use a grow light on a timer in the basement? Ajay, what do you think about that?
John, you can definitely overwinter peppers. By default, are perennial plants. So in tropical countries, you know, peppers would just keep growing, and you might have multiple flushes over 2 years. But if you are planning to overwinter them, if you're putting them in the basement, make sure you provide enough light. You need to provide the right amount of water, so keep them irrigated and also fertilized, because they need to grow. They need to keep up with the energy. The main constraint, again, is light. So as long as you provide a good amount of light, and if they can also get some direct sunlight, you can overwinter.
All right. And you think that that would work in his basement?
That's what I said. You know, he has to absolutely make sure there is a good amount of light. Typically, when we grow plants in the greenhouse, this is more technical, but you can buy a light meter and measure the amount of light you get. So if the plants are getting anywhere between 150 to 200 micromoles per meter per second, that's a good amount of light. They will keep growing. But anything below that, the plants will become more leggy. They will stretch. That's the most common thing the plants do. So keeping it near a windowsill and also providing some additional light will help.
All right. Sounds like a fun experiment. This is a question from Booney in Ames. Aaron, what do you think the best options are for cover crops to plant around a vegetable garden?
So in a vegetable garden?
Well, she said around, but I'm going to guess in.
I think, actually, Ajay probably has
okay,
a lot
Ajay,
of good insight
you
into
go.
This one.
So it's
hot
a good,
potato.
It's a good thought or plan to plant cover crops in the vegetable garden. One thing I would warn, or at least Booney know, is have an exit strategy. Whatever you plant, think of how you are going to terminate in the spring. Because the worst thing that can happen is you plant a cover crop, and it goes out of hand in the spring, and you're not able to terminate it. You don't have the, the tiller or mulcher, and then you are stuck because now the time is ticking on the spring crop. So have an exit strategy. That's first. There are several cover crops that can be planted at this time of the year. Cereal rye is a very commonly planted cover crop that will overwinter here in Iowa. It produces a significant amount of biomass come April, May, so make sure you have a technique to terminate it, till it under, because otherwise it will become a weed. But it does a great job overwintering here in Iowa. Another cover crop would be winter wheat. That is commonly used as a cover crop. Triticale, another cover crop in the grass family, that's a good one. And we still have maybe, you know, a few days from now until the first killing frost. Now, this is being very wishful, but we can plant a mustard cover crop or oilseed radish cover crop that will winter kill. So you don't have to worry about terminating it come next spring. So that's also an option.
All right. We have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer many more questions. With me today, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. You can call us 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions. You can call us at 866-780-9100, tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Craig. He says, I planted cauliflower this year that normally grows well, but we got nothing. Any theories on why this happened? I know that's pretty general, Ajay, but have you been hearing at all about that happening?
So it would depend on when the cauliflower was planted. If it was in the spring and late in the spring, cauliflower is a very finicky crop. Most of the cold crops, including cabbage and broccoli, is that the head development is influenced by several factors and weather being one of them. So if it gets too hot at the time the buds were, you know, transforming to become head, if it becomes too hot at that time or there was a drought at that time, that could lead to the plant not producing any head. So it's again very finicky and very weather dependent. That's why many of these crops, cauliflower, broccoli, do exceptionally well when planted in July, because when the time comes for maturation, it's fall. So the temperatures are cooler and they are cool season crops to begin with. So I believe, again, if planted in spring, it could be the weather.
All right, let's go to the phones. Carol is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a hedge of lilacs that's 200 feet long, and they were planted in the 60s, and they still just bloom amazingly every spring, beautifully. But recently they have been invaded by wisteria vines and what I think are called wild grape vines, and they're choking out my bushes. So I've been fighting a losing battle pulling the vines out this last 2 weeks. I cut them down as I pulled them out. I cut down below the ground level, the root as much as I can, but I can't get the roots out. Is there anything that I can do? I don't want to use a chemical. It'll probably kill my bush as well as the vine. What can I do? They're winning my fight. Oh. These vines are taking over.
That sounds frustrating, Carol. Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, it's pretty. They are pretty tenacious. And I think one of the hardest weed challenges is a vining weed inside something that you want to preserve. Typically, our best course of action is going in and removing what you can down to the soil surface, and then treating with some kind of herbicide, a carefully selected herbicide, so something that's not going to travel through the soil. Glyphosate is a good option for that. And the reason why is because you're removing all this material. Yeah, glyphosate.
Glyphosate
is the active ingredient.
Right.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what? I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're removing the material, and that's good, but that root system underneath, especially for many vining weeds, including wild grape and wisteria and trumpet vine and some of these others, is very tenacious. And so you need some kind of method to kill that root system, and it's nearly impossible to dig it out. So using a paintbrush, like a foam brush, to apply it to the cut end within 5 or so minutes of cutting it off, is a good option, or just on a calm day, spraying that cut end after you cut it off will help. It will probably, if they're really well established, it'll probably take a couple of applications, but that can be effective with a little bit of persistence. Otherwise, you are stuck with pulling when you see it, cutting off when you see it, trying to exhaust the plant by removing the top growth, but that's so hard with some of these vining weeds.
Well, and Aaron, just to underline what you're saying there is, if you use the glyphosate, if you are extremely targeted, this is a situation where you have to be very, very careful. Although that's great advice for using glyphosate pretty much almost wherever you use it.
Yes, it is. And the nice thing about glyphosate is that it does pretty much become inactive once it contacts the soil. And there are other herbicides that don't do that. So that's why it gets recommended so often for this application.
All right, Carol, thank you so much for your call and good luck with that. Jennifer's on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Jennifer. Jennifer, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I am. Yeah, so my question is, I love pumpkins and squash, and I had a bumper crop this year of butternut squash and acorn squash, but I only got a single Hubbard squash and just one pumpkin as well. So I was just wondering, why do some perform really well? Why do others not? Am I not feeding them enough? I'm just very curious about that.
So with respect to pumpkins, number of fruits they produce is directly dependent on pollinators, so our native bees and other pollinators, other insects that help to move the pollen from the male flower to the female flower. So it could be that that those plants were not well visited by the bees or the pollinators, because of which there was no fruit formation. It could also be nutritional, and again, if we do not provide the plants with the right amount of nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium, which are the macronutrients, some of the plants will not go into reproductive phase. The fruits will not form. The other thing, it also depends on, how closely they were planted. Sometimes, too much of competition, if they are planted very close, can also affect the amount of nutrient each plant get. So there are several factors, although the pollination will be the first one I would think of is the reason.
All right. Jennifer, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Brenda. She says, I have a 6-inch high red bud that has been planted in a Pringles can for 2 months. Can I put it in the ground and how should I take care of it? Aaron?
I would put it in the ground. It'll overwinter much better in the ground. You could do that anytime. The big thing will be put in the ground, make sure that it stays well watered, but not overwatered, and then put something over it to protect it from browsing this winter, because a little red bud that size will be a big target and it will only take one bite. So make sure that you put a cylinder with a top of chicken wire or hardware cloth to protect you over the winter, and then when spring gets here, you can pull it off. The first couple of years, you will be astonished at how quickly it grows.
All right, so something shaped like a Pringles can, but made out of wire that you put over the tree as well.
With a top.
Right. I would love to know what led to this tree being planted in a Pringles can, but That's a story for a different day.
Feeds, sometimes it seeds prolifically, and it's so hard to just pull them out of the ground because it's a tree and a beautiful one at that. So it often gets saved that way.
All right. Here's a question from Carol for you, Ajay. We have planted garlic for the past 4 to 5 years, always setting aside bulbs from our harvest to replant in the fall. This summer, when we harvested, our bulbs were quite small in comparison to past years. Is there something we should do differently when we plant this fall, or was this possibly due to weather conditions this summer?
Garlic is a heavy feeder, and often we forget that we need to apply some fertilizer at the time we plant. So mixing the soil with a good quality compost, amending it with compost will definitely help to for that garlic clove to establish in the fall. And definitely you will see results next spring. Also in the spring, making sure that we are providing the right amount of fertilizer to the garlic so that it keeps growing and produces those big bulbs. So this thing is not true for everything, but definitely for garlic, is that we always would like to plant the bigger cloves, because the size of the clove, which you harvest next season, depends on how big that clove was in the fall. So when we separate these cloves for planting, be very careful of, and I know it's very tempting not to discard some of the cloves, but only plant the big cloves, because there's a direct correlation of what you plant and what you harvest.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Kathy on the line in Ackley now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hello. Are you ready for my question?
Yep. Shoot.
Oh, I put sod or had sod put in the backyard. It's not the whole yard. It's just a smaller area. And I've gone online and checked, and there every place I've gotten says fertilize and use weed killer. And there are different kinds and different amounts. Going into the winter and making sure that I'll be okay next spring, can I have some good suggestions what to do, or do I just leave it alone? It looks good right now.
Aaron?
Well, you can do, I would definitely look at fertilizing about a pound or a half a pound of nitrogen for every 1,000 square feet of this area. Putting that down probably kind of late October, the early part of November.
Okay.
That would really help. You probably don't need to put down a broadleaf herbicide unless you're seeing broadleaf weeds popping up right now. Typically sod, when it's first installed, is very clean and weed free. And you sometimes get weeds that come up like basically in the seams. And if you're having a big issue with that, then I would put down some broadleaf herbicide, but chances are you're not. And I would probably let it be for this year and then start your typical broadleaf weed control in the fall of next year.
Okay. We have some, weeds that are coming up, and I think you're right. I think it is at the seams because it's kind of specific where they're coming up. And around the edges, not a lot. I pulled several yesterday or the day before. It was nice out, and they came up easily. So I can stay on top of them that way. But thank you so much. I really appreciate this. A half a pound of nitrogen for 1,000 square feet.
Yeah, that's a pretty light amount, but that sod, again, is probably pretty healthy, so that will work.
All right, Kathy, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Rick in Waterloo. Hi, Rick.
Hi. We've got red raspberries, and they did just great this year. And I wonder if there's anything I should do in the fall so I can have a good crop next year.
Ajay?
Aaron, you want to take this question?
Yeah.
I'm not much comfortable about the raspberry.
It will depend on which kind of raspberries you have. So there are two kinds. They're the ones that bloom kind of early summer, and then there are the kinds that bloom late summer, early fall. And if you have the ones that bloom late summer, early fall, and most of the work that you do when it comes to pruning happens in the spring.
in the early spring, late winter, early spring. If you have the type that bloom in the late summer, early fall, you can cut the entire, all of the canes down to the ground because those plants bloom on the current year's growth. If you have the ones that bloom earlier in the summer, then you'll want to remove only those canes that fruited this year. And they usually have the leftover flower calyxes and buds on them. They're usually a slightly different color. They're usually darker in color. And you would go through your patch and remove those back down to the ground. But this work wouldn't happen in the fall. You can do it in the spring. The only reason I would do anything in the fall is if I had a real serious disease issue with my raspberries, in which case you would want to remove that stuff to hopefully not have it overwinter and infect things next year. But if they did well, you probably didn't have any disease issues.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Joyce in Monticello. Hi, Joyce.
Thank you. I'm wondering how soon I should bring in my butternut squash.
Ajay?
I won't worry until the temperature starts going close to the, like, 32, 36. A small frost is okay, but a hard frost is something we absolutely want to avoid, because if you have a hard frost, it may not affect the fruit at that time, but when you bring it in, it will definitely reduce the storage life of the squash. So a light frost is okay, but if it's mature, go ahead and harvest. I mean, there's no point of leaving them out there if the foliage is already gone. We don't want to expose these fruits out there and get sunburn, because since there is no foliage, the sun will directly hit the fruit. So keep into account both the sunburn aspect and also the temperature. So definitely before a killing frost.
All right, let's try to
watch.
Go on, Joyce.
Watch what the. Make sure we aren't going to get a really hard. How hard of temperature is a hard frost?
So anything below 32 will definitely affect this the squash. Now, is there enough foliage on the plant right now in your plot or in the garden?
There is not a lot of foliage on the plants.
Mm-hmm. And has the squash matured?
I have not tried any of them
okay.
to see if they're ready to cook because I left them on the vine.
Okay. A butternut squash, you know, typically it's about a 70 to 90 day crop. So since the time you have planted, if you have hit that mark of, let's say, the average, let's say 80, 85 day, I think it should be ready to be harvested. But you don't, if the frost is not going to go below 32, you're fine, but we don't want to keep a mature fruit exposed out there. So I would suggest if it has reached that point of 80, 85 day, you should go ahead and harvest.
All right, Joyce, thanks a lot for your call. And one last question from Mary. Erin, the derecho left me a new sunny area in my front yard, and I'm watching with interest to see what volunteers will grow there. If I get a redbud seedling, I'm wondering if I could keep it small with pruning, or is that not recommended for the redbud?
I probably wouldn't do that. I would kind of encourage, because any kind of random pruning like that could end up creating a really inferior branching structure in that tree. So you definitely want to let it get several years worth of growth, kind of see what it's doing, try to get a nice, strong central lead out of that, because you can. Redbud is not as easy to do that with. They don't naturally grow that way, but the closer you can get to that, the longer the tree is sturdy and good in your right. in
but
your landscape.
They're also
so,
relatively small trees anyway, aren't they?
They are. They are. Most of the time they top out at about 20, maybe 25 feet at the most.
All right, so it might be a candidate anyway without the shaping. We are out of time.
Yeah.
Erin Style, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Ajay Nair, thank you.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
Ajay Nair is an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Erin Style, assistant director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.